Bonjour et bienvenue dans Safi Culture Club où on explore des thèmes lesbiens au cinéma, à la télé, dans les livres, dans la musique et partout où les Safis errent. Voilà.
We are your hosts. I'm Laurel Hachinova.
And I'm Audrey. Welcome, friends and family, to the final film on the top 10 list of lesbian films, brought to you by the Portrait of a Lady on Fire survey. This may come as a surprise to some of you, but the film we'll be talking about today, as voted on by you, is the 1986 sapphic teen comedy classic, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Just kidding.
You already read the title of this episode. It is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Surprise. And to help us celebrate the objectively best lesbian film ever made, and because we are excellent planners with incredible foresight, Celine Sciamma's birthday, which is, I think, technically tomorrow if you are listening on Friday when this episode dropped, we are joined by a very special guest who you just heard introduce us in French, Kelly Quinn. Welcome, Kelly.
Yay.
Hello.
Hello, Kelly.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here. I'm a big fan.
We are also big fans. It is mutual.
Kelly is a comedian, writer, actor, and co-host of the hilarious podcast, Writing Around, which you should definitely check out. A few disclaimers. We are going to be spoiling Portrait. So if you haven't seen it, pause and watch it. Also, how did you find this podcast? I don't know. And then also, we're going to be reading some listener comments. So if we butcher your username, we're sorry.
Okay, so I think we're going to change the format a little bit from how we've been doing this like top 10 lesbian film list. Because for most of you who are listening, who've probably been around for a while, you might know that our first season was dedicated entirely to this little film that we're talking about. Like 50 episodes. So if you need a primer, like, I think that's a good place to start.
All 50 episodes.
All 50 episodes, and then come back.
Yeah, just breeze through them.
Just pause this episode and listen to all those and then come back.
50 plus hours later, come back. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to start by asking Kelly to just close your eyes and remember back to, you know, the first time you watched Portrait. And we'll ask you a few questions about your experience.
Okay.
Starting with, do you remember how you first heard about Portrait of a Lady on Fire?
In doing research for this podcast appearance, I did search the word portrait in my text messages.
Oh my God. Yes.
And I found, like, August of 2019, after the Cannes Film Festival ended, I don't know, like months before, but I was texting a friend like, oh, I heard there was a really good lesbian film at Cannes this year. So I think the first time that I heard about it was after the festival.
Thank you for digging into that.
Yeah, you're well. You're really well. I knew. I was like, it's going to be really important to them that I do that.
They love receipts, so.
Mm-hmm.
So when and where did you first end up seeing it?
I ended up seeing it that November 2019 in Paris. I happened to be there for Thanksgiving with my partner, and then my partner left the city a day early and I had like a day to wander around alone, and I saw that it was playing at a little cinema and I went alone, and obviously no English subtitles, and I was about a year and a half into Duolingo for French and let's just say there's a lot that I missed, but still, you know, completely overwhelmed by the visual beauty of the film, certainly, and the chemistry is such that, you know, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, stuff about like the dead sister, for example, I some of the finer points I definitely missed.
Do you remember what you were what you thought the plot was before you understood what was happening?
This is a great question. I knew just from summaries what the basic plot of the film was, and if I'm being truthful, I don't know. I think whenever you're a beginner to something, you're a little arrogant about how easy it's going to be or how good you are at it. So I think with French, I was like, oh yeah, well, I probably basically am understanding this. But then watching it again in English with English subtitles, I was like, oh my God, that's really embarrassing.
So when you watch it now, would you say you fully understand it?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is nice.
So you were like, you considered yourself a beginner just 2.5 years ago, and now you're pretty fluent.
Yeah, which I've been very lucky. I did get to live in Paris for a year. I went to be an English teacher. So that, I think, was better for my comprehension than anything else. But yeah, definitely understand, I would say, most of it now. I got really high recently and tried to change a setting so that I could watch it with French subtitles. And that was not available. I, like, couldn't figure out how to do that. It's possible that I had just, you know, impeded myself.
No, I looked for that, too.
But, yeah, yeah, I feel like you'd have to probably buy the French version and
like
then
Blu-ray or something.
Yeah, yeah, and then get like a region 2 or whatever region it is, you know, Blu-ray to watch it.
Right.
And that'll just be your portrait Blu-ray device.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dedicated thing for it. That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your first impressions were after, at the end? So you have just sat through it, sort of comprehending the universal language of love, I guess. And then you get to the end. Do you remember what you were thinking or feeling?
Yeah, I remember being completely overwhelmed with like excitement, because I think really aside from Carol, I had not seen a lesbian film sort of punching at that weight before, where you're like, oh, this is artwork. This is not just something I'm watching to, you know, like, see a lesbian or see a woman like kiss another woman. And then I just was so amped off the film that I like wandered around Paris by myself for a while and went to a bar and had a little drink, made a friend. I stayed up really late, and then I got up really early for my flight home the next morning.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah, amazing. Kind of a very French lesbian whirlwind.
It really was. Yeah. It was really nice.
I wish I could have seen your reaction in that first watch to, like, I don't know, the armpit scene or like anything that it's sort of like, whoa, what is happening? You know?
Right. Yeah. Again, I think like the visuals of the film are walking you through what's happening alongside the dialogue. So I don't remember being as confused as I should have been. But I do remember that in my second watch, I realized, oh, I got to this movie late the first time, because when I saw it for the next time in LA, when it came out there on Valentine's Day, and I was there visiting friends, the opening scene where she's like teaching the students in the art workshop, I had missed completely in the theater. So I was like, oh, they must have added this to the American version, because this was not in the one I saw.
You're like, those Americans need a lot more context.
I was like, this movie started in a boat for sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's very different, right? Because it's like you don't really know where the narration
and
is coming from.
And I honestly sort of preferred, I honestly think this movie could have started just on the boat.
Take note, Celine.
Yeah.
So we have a very important question for you. Celine has decided to gift you anything you want from the set of the film. What do you ask for?
This is a really nice question. I think I take the cross stitch. I think I take Sophie's cross stitch that she makes. Yeah, it sort of fits into the design aesthetic of my home anyway. And it's small, it's portable.
Yeah, the portability. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the paintings would take up a lot of space.
Yeah, too big. And I don't need that in my house, you know?
You don't want to
wake
up every
morning. The film
already
looms so large in my life. Right. Yeah, I don't need more like huge memorabilia.
It's like Eloise is like a statement piece in your living room with that expression.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, that might be too much.
Yeah, for sure.
Or in your bedroom.
Yeah, you wake up every morning to
yeah.
her just staring at you.
Yeah, I just don't need it, you know?
Okay, so switching gears, we're going to share the listener poll results, starting with, we asked, have you seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire? And I honestly thought it was going to be 100% yes, but it was 97% yes, 3% no.
Oh, cool.
So
Maybe you guys picked up some new people during your League of Their Own work.
It was work. It must be that, right? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you're going to love it if you're still listening to this.
I know. I was thinking at first, I was kind of like, not mad, but I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, oh, I'm so jealous that you get to watch this.
I know. 3% of you are going to get to see it for the first time.
You know? Yeah.
All right. And then we also asked, when and where did you watch it? If you did. Lots of you got to see it on a big screen, which is great. I'm so happy for you. Others like me watched it for the first time at home on Hulu. Ana Luisa Lomba said, illegally downloaded by my sister in June 2020.
By
my sister.
My sister, for sure. Yeah. Mel said, first time was on YouTube before I got Hulu a month later, only had Chinese subtitles.
So kind of a similar experience then, maybe. Oh, well, sorry. Like not being able to understand.
I wonder if Mel is in China or Taiwan or something and got Chinese subtitles or...
Right. Mel, we need more.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Or it was like the only one that was available was...
Maybe
like,
it's just your YouTube settings. You should check. Molly said, in May 2021 over Discord with my long distance now ex-girlfriend... Laughing, crying emoji.
And then from Build Me Up, on a shift in residency when the COVID crash happened.
I had a question about this one. Like, so you were, it's a two hour movie, right?
Yeah. This is a medical doctor taking 2 hours out of a shift during a global pandemic to watch this lesbian film, I think.
Well, maybe it wasn't like during their shift, but they were like waiting. They were like on call and like, you know.
Right. It's during the precious amount of time that you're given to sleep. Right. And they were like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Very curious.
If both those people listen to this, could you just write back with more? Right, yeah. Just more detail and then.
We'll dedicate an entire episode just to those two responses.
Yeah, to those stories.
Yeah. So. We also asked you to rate the film out of 5 flames. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
So yeah. Mm-hmm. 1% of you rated it 2 or fewer.
That's sick and you're wrong. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say that. You're wrong.
1% also 3 flames. I don't know. I don't even know how to react to this. And then 5%, 4. So far we have covered 7% of you.
Okay.
And then, Laurel, would you like to reveal?
93% of you rated it 5 flames.
Now, I know the sample size is, you know, it's like,
not
okay.
Global.
Right. Well, it is the audience of a podcast who did start listening to the podcast because it talked about this movie. So... You know, I'm not a statistician. I feel like it's probably, but the people have spoken.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is definitely a representative slice of the population.
What does it have on Rotten Tomatoes? Just out of curiosity, 97% tomato meter, 92% audience score. So
okay.
That sounds right. Yeah.
It should be 100, but that's fine. Okay. It's
We are in many ways the movie's mom and really need it to be doing well. I feel, yeah, this is one of those that I got too personal about. And there's a lot of stuff where I'm like, we can totally disagree on stuff. But I do remember one of the friends I went to see this with in Los Angeles, which was my first time seeing it with English subtitles in the United States, as I said earlier. Turned to me. I don't remember what the moment was during the film. She was like, if they don't fuck soon, I'm going to light this place on fire. And I was like, "What? Are you not like on the edge of your seat this whole time? What else do you want? I don't know. I was like, wow, that's so prosaic that you want them to fuck faster. Yeah.
What was their reaction in the end? Like, how did they?
Didn't really like it. But this person, I will say, also hates Kate Blanchett sort of categorically.
I'm not interested
just like in terms
this.
Of and this is a lesbian, by the way. This is a lesbian who did not like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, did not like Carol.
Ugh.
We haven't
sure they're a
like,
lovely person.
Well, I don't know. I'm in a fight with them right now about Tar. So,
I mean, based on the data that I have right now, I don't think they're very good.
I also have two lesbian friends who hated Portrait and similar complaint. Like, why did it take so long for them to fuck? They should have been fucking right away. Like, there just wasn't enough sex.
I'm curious what these people's like favorite lesbian movie is.
Right.
Probably like Blue is the Warmest Color.
I don't know. Which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen it either. Intentionally.
Mm. Right, because there were so many reports about that one being super like weird and shitty for the actresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of the disgusting tactics of the director. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, lots of sex though. So if you like that, if you're into that kind of thing, people are gonna be like, "This woman is a nightmare."
We also asked, "Have you watched it recently and discovered something new?" Josephine or Josephine said, "About 40 times. Every time I watch it, there is something new."
Wow,
40 times is great. Tell me one of the new things.
I know. And then from Taryn, so many times, but my favorite was with y'all for Baby's Birthday, which is very sweet. And that was the first time, Laurel, you saw it in theaters.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so we asked if there is anything specific about Portrait you'd like us to cover in this episode, and we'll share some of those responses too from Tuck. I def think Eloise had experiences before Marianne, and I want to talk about it.
I think, did we talk about this a little bit? Like, it's a convent.
Yes, we've talked about this extensively in our first season.
I was like, it feels a little familiar. Yeah, okay. We had a whole episode on it.
Related to that, I wanted to ask y'all after you've watched it again, and maybe I should save this for later, but I'm like curious what you if you think Sophie knew, which I know is like a question that we've asked before, but I don't know. It just came up again when I was watching it.
She knew.
She knew. Yeah. Okay, simple.
Hashtag Sophie knew, yeah.
Perfect.
Let's get it trending. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rachel said, my fave trivia bit is how the veils are used to show consent in the fire kiss.
Yeah, that's a great trivia bit. So that was from Rachel. And then from the other Rachel, which is actually their username. The absence of male gaze gave me permission to demand more from art, media, personal relationships.
Ooh, personal relationships.
I love that.
Great.
I feel like I did read a lot of reviews around the time that this came out being like, I didn't know that things were allowed to be like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That made me have a lot of questions about life. And I was like, wow, that's the function of art. That's so beautiful that this film is able to do that.
And then the last one that we'll share from you, you all, is from Shayna, who said, it still has a hold on me and it's been at least 2 years since I saw it for the first time.
Yeah, it still has a hold on me too. I can relate to that.
I was a little bit worried because I hadn't watched it start to finish in a long time because for the podcast, we would just watch segments of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch the whole thing. And it was still really, really great. And I was very relieved that it still felt really great.
Yeah.
Let's definitely talk about that in a second. But in the meantime, thank you everyone for writing in.
So we have all actually recently rewatched the film. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. After having not seen it in at least months, I think for me it might have been a full year at least. Mm-hmm. All right, Kelly, we're starting with you. How did this time compare to the first time? Well, we probably a lot different because you can.
Yeah. Much greater comprehension, just like plot wise, dialogue wise. Yeah. I took a couple semesters of college Italian, and I remember that first time being like, so those parts I am sort of grasping better than the French, the like 3 seconds of the movie that happened in Italian. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, she lived in Milan, blah, blah, blah. I rewatched last night because I wanted to be super fresh, and also because I was putting it off because I was experiencing that fear of like, oh, no, what if it's not as good as I remember? I don't know, from the last time I watched it a couple months ago, what if it got really bad? And I did a double feature with In the Mood for Love. And I just have to say, and my partner was out of the house, I was just spent the whole night crying. I spent like 4 hours crying in my house. It is two gorgeous, exquisite, you know, films about unfulfilled love or, you know, whatever.
Wow. Yeah.
Great pairing.
Longing. Yeah. Yeah, really tough. So I didn't do myself any favors in the rewatch.
That's a heavy cocktail. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty tough night. Dark night of the soul. Yeah, I think, like, I'm always curious just in a sort of academic way about translation. And I didn't note any specific moments. But as my understanding of the language has gotten better, I feel like, oh, I wonder why. And this is the kind of thing it would have been good to make a note of, probably. But like, oh, I wonder why this phrase translated this way. Or I really, once again, would love to get my hand on the screenplay in French. It's, I definitely read the English translation that all the fans made that was so great. It's such a beautiful labor of love. But just, yeah, always interests me to see, for example, like how the moment where, you know, they use the impersonal to instead of the formal vous, that kind of stuff. Because that's translated so differently in every like piece of media that makes its way into the United States from France, based on context, I guess, and like power dynamic. And I always like hearing how those choices get made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do wonder how much she elaborates on that, even in the French script, you know?
Right. Yeah. If it's even like noted or if it's just like a change, because then they switch back to the formal. Right. So, yeah, I don't know.
Audrey, how did your rewatch compare to your first time?
It still knocked me out. Well, comparing to the first time is hard because I feel like the first time was this sort of like life-changing experience. But I think every subsequent time it's been very similar. Like, it's still very hard for me to watch the end. I was like, should I turn it off? I was like, no, I'll sit through it. But it's like still just as moving, I would say, as like the, you know, the first several times I saw it. I did catch a lot of things that I either didn't catch before or I'd just like forgotten about. There were more like sort of mini observations, but I have this list of like 14.
Yeah, same.
Do it. Oh my God, please.
We're going to do
it. I'm so glad how much more observant you guys are than I am.
Should I cover some of these?
Yeah, do a few.
Okay. So this is in like, you know, chronological order, but in the beginning when that girl in Marianne's class asks like if she painted the painting in the back, I didn't notice until now that like the girl next to her gives this look.
Oh yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Are you fucking crazy?
Yeah,
like how
she's clearly mad.
Yeah,
Colette.
Okay, so these are so dumb. Another one is like I noticed that Marianne's like walking barefoot when she gets to the chateau, and she goes downstairs to get like the bread and cheese, and she's barefoot. And I was just thinking like, oh my God, her feet must be so dirty.
Yeah. That was the thought I had this time, not related to feet, but just like living at that time. I noticed way more this watch how much they were all like having to haul their skirts around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like the physical heaviness of the clothes and the sort of trappings of being a woman at that time. I noticed more.
Yeah.
It's probably like very dusty.
And also the dustiness.
Yeah. Your skirts are just like getting dusty on the hems and everything all constantly. Ugh. What a pain.
Yes.
Oh, my skirt hems are dusty again. Ugh.
Yeah, once again. Wow. Okay.
And they're wearing the same thing every day. So it's like, you know, just collecting more and more dust.
Yeah. Dust smells. Yeah.
I'll share one more, which is, I was like, does anyone actually know for sure if the sister died by suicide? Like, it could have been Sophie.
Wow.
Because she was the only one with her.
Hot take.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know, she didn't cry out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh my God, it's a horror movie.
Yeah, and just like
that. Yeah, just like
movie.
That. Yep. But yeah, Laurel, what about you? What was this experience like for you compared to the previous times?
It definitely didn't punch me in the guts the way it did the first time. It didn't change my life again, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But it was still really moving. Like you, I had a hard time watching the last scene. But interestingly, so I have a lot of anxiety watching people or characters that I like, let's specify, arguing with each other. Because it's like, oh, this is just a communication issue. You can solve this.
Yeah, it's like 99% of films.
I know. I'm like, wow, film is so hard for you.
It's really hard for me.
It actually
no
is.
No one understands. But this time it was easier for me to watch at least the first argument where
the painting gets
the painting Yeah. And it was actually sort of funny the way that Eloise was like, oh, is this me? Like, and yeah, then Marianne is like, yeah, it's totally, it looks exactly like you. And yeah, so I was able to find more humor than anxiety in that scene.
Yeah, that scene also very funny to me upon rewatching, because I imagine that it's a conversation that not just one lesbian couple has had. Just being like, well, I didn't know you were an art critic. Okay, yes. So that phrase, that's been said before, it'll be said again.
Yeah, that actually is in my notes too, that the humor, I don't know if it's because I've watched it so many times that it's almost parts of it have become camp to me.
Yeah,
Like even the scene when she falls over from, like, she's on fire, Eloise, and then she like, I was like, was this funny the first time? And like, even when she leaves after, so they kiss and then she walks away without anything.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
I think with the right background music, it could be really funny.
Like a zany Benny Hill, something. Like what?
But overall, I was able to catch a lot of smaller things. And I think one of the things that I paid attention to more this time were the scenes with the Countess. I think I just sort of glossed over how much the Countess lights up when she talks about Milan. You know, she's like, she comes back to life about it. She's so excited. She's, you know, and you can tell that she's maybe been miserable, you know, in this place for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, she's really aching to go back. And so it gave me sort of a softer spot for her. And then the last one that I'll share is that when Eloise does like the little butterfly kiss to her face, it's so tender, and it made me realize that her relationship with her mother is really complex, you know, because she's in the middle of being forced to marry someone, right? But she's still able to do this very sort of gentle, genuine thing, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, it's a very tender moment.
Like, she's angry at the situation, but not necessarily at her mother specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the first time I saw it, that moment was kind of like creepy to me, but it's become more and more tender, I think, as like the mom has become more dimensional in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Can I share a couple more things?
Oh, great. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick out like a couple of those.
Oh, we're not doing a full episode on like 28 more things that we...
We could.
Because I have like a list of 20 things.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Amazing.
Okay, we probably don't need to go over all of our...
Well, sure. I want, like, to hear them.
I'm like, this is... I want like our guests to have more time, like not for us to just...
Kelly,
ramble.
Thanks for
like,
coming to listen to us just talk to you personally,
I know.
But to each other and not include you.
No, I love it.
Okay, so something I caught this time that I hadn't before was like the transition between the chateau and the cliffside, the beach, is so seamless. I don't think I would have known it was shot in two different places.
No, definitely not.
You know?
Yeah.
That occurred to me this time too for the first time. Yeah, just because like in the intervening years have read a ton of interviews, obviously, about like how it was filmed and how they did the exteriors and the beach stuff in Key Biron first, and then like went to the house to do the rest of it. And yeah, just like from a logistics, like production shot list, it's like, oh yeah, everybody's like, I don't know, I guess there are maybe minor like changes in hair and stuff, but like, yeah, there are a couple scenes where they would have, like, for example, even the first time she sees Eloise and then Eloise leaves the house.
Yes.
And then like has to run to the cliffs and her like thing falls off. That's like, okay, those are like maybe weeks apart that those two are shot, but you wouldn't know. And even, just also from obviously an emotional standpoint, like.
Or like the scarves one. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah, they hit the emotional beats of each scene without, which is, you know, the job of an actor to be able to do that. But I still find it amazing.
Yeah.
But also like I think the cinematography and probably like all the stuff that's happening in the post too, right? With like color correction and, you know, it's just, yes, it's their job too.
You're all good at your jobs, everybody.
You're all good at it. Yeah.
Just wanted to
tell
you.
But I think because we watch a lot of movies where all the, those, it's everything has to come together. I think this movie was the beginning of me really becoming interested in cinema and movie going as an experience. Mm-hmm. And this is like so late in life that this happened for me. But it was a year when like Parasite came out, Portrait came out, and I was just like, oh shit, movies are, movies rock, actually.
These are really cool. But
it's, then you do, I think, if you start, as you all have for years, like, if you think critically about mm-hmm. movies, so many people have to do a yeah. really good job for the thing to be cohesive and for the vision of the writer, director, actors to come across right. And that's why so many lesbian films that we love miss the mark in or fall short yeah. in ways that we wish they didn't. You yeah. know, I recently listened to your episode on But I'm a Cheerleader, and it's like, yeah, there are places where, like, either due to budget or because there are so many voices collaborating on a film that you can't always, you know, like, people's stuff doesn't line up if someone different writes it than the person directing it. I do think that's why my favorite films do tend to be written and directed by the same person. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But yeah, really, I don't know. I don't even remember how we got started on. Oh, because of the transitions between the locations you were
yeah,
saying.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah,
though,
no,
too.
That's
like,
a good call out.
If they're doing a really good job, you notice, you think about their work less in a way because you're
yeah,
so sucked
for sure.
into
right,
it.
Right, right.
Whereas with some of the sapphic films in the sapphic universe, you're immediately taken out of it because of any number of missteps, you know, and it's just
right.
It makes it clear how much can go wrong, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really always appreciate when something comes out and has the effect that it intended to. Mm-hmm. That is so difficult to do. And as a person who makes my own stuff, I feel like, yeah, that's especially on a scale like that. I really don't know how anyone who makes features does it.
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. I can share a small one. I wonder, okay, so they're sitting on the beach, and it's the time they're on the beach when Marianne kind of stares at Eloise's hands for a while to sort of draw them behind a rock later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Eloise saw her looking at her hands for a long time, because I feel like that could be very sort of misconstrued. And so now I sort of think that, like, oh, she keeps looking at me, and now she's, like, staring at my hands, and I've now carried that into the future scene where she's like, oh, that explains all the looks. It's like,
oh, for yeah. sure. Yeah. I feel like that.
I think
yeah.
that's direct and intended. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Especially the hands like seal the deal. Yeah. She's like, let's see. Okay. So one big one that
juicy.
It was just more like an observation. It's like super obvious, but like it sort of fully formed in my head this time, which is that Sophie is like the catalyst for their relationship. Like, their romance, like, really hinges on her unwanted pregnancy
right,
in a way,
right?
Because it's, like, everything they do to help with trying to get her this abortion brings them closer. They share this, like, common goal of getting her this abortion. You know, they go to the feast or coven. Everything at the fire is happening because of Sophie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first time Eloise joins them at, like, the dining area is to give Sophie the tea and, like, help her hang. And, you know, that's when Marianne says later that, like, that's when she's known love, right? Isn't that scene? Marianne paints Eloise after she falls asleep next to Sophie after they carry upstairs. There's flirting during the card game. So I just wonder, like, it's hard to really say, like, how their romance would have manifested without Sophie. And not that I ever thought that Sophie wasn't, like, an integral part of the film. Obviously is, but she is. But, like, I think after this watch, I was like, Sophie is the fucking MVP. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, this is tangentially related. I'd remembered one of the translation questions I had. And it's in that scene when they're all in the kitchen and Sophie's like... hanging from a rafter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, so you've known love and what is it like? And Marianne's like, yes. And then Heloise is like, I think the translation in the film we see is, how does it feel?
Yeah.
But the question she's asking in French is, how is it made?
Ooh,
like, she is asking, as far as my, and again, sometimes I think because I'm still like learning that I translate very literally, but I'm like, I think she was asking for mechanics. I truly think that was a more explicit question than...
Interesting.
Oh, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Huh. Yeah.
Whoa, that's interesting. Yeah.
I would love to be checked on that by a French fan. Let me know if you get any questions about
right?
that.
Okay.
But I think, I think the phrasing is like, comment c'est fait? Like, how is it made?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I guess how does it feel is maybe a little more poetic sounding?
Delicate, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to share any more?
I mean, I can share a lot. Do we want to just do like one more? And then maybe...
Yeah, I'll do one more.
Okay. Let's see. I don't know. Okay, so it's been so long. We've talked about so many things that I can't remember if we mentioned some of these things.
Yeah,
and they're just,
I'm
they feel like revelations to me again.
You go back and listen to our 50 episodes.
It'd be funny if I, like, I'll say this thing and then it's like, oh yeah, Audrey told me that. And then I'm just like regurgitating it back to you. In the last scene where Marianne is leaving the chateau, she's about to walk out and Eloise is on the stairs and she says, "Retourne à toi." And the scene goes to black. I didn't really consciously think about it before, but when she's a ghost, she fades away, you know? But in this scene, we fade away.
Oh yeah.
And it was really, it was because everything goes black and it's like we've been sucked out of that memory.
Ooh. Now. I don't think we've talked about that. Good catch.
Oh God. An original thought.
It's hard with this.
I know, it really is. That made me think of something else, which is that a thought I had somehow for the first time watching this is, wow, I guess like probably when you go to see a show, like a music show, in those times you were told the program of what would be playing, but probably Marianne never mentioned, oh, the person who played this song that we listened to together was Vivaldi. And maybe you guys have already covered this in episodes that I missed, but like, oh yeah, that she sat down for this concert and did not expect to hear what she was about to hear. It somehow only occurred to me for the first time that like during this watch that like, oh, she really walked in not expecting that at all. She didn't like go to bask in nostalgia and then just gets like slapped with a wave of memory. And
wait, you're right, right? Because I think in my head I had always just thought she, when they sat down to the harpsichord, that Marianne said something
she's
about it.
But
she's just
like
describing.
She
doesn't
like,
say
this is a song I love.
That's
and then
right.
She just goes right into it. Yeah.
Maybe Eloise has just been going to the symphony for every day.
Yeah,
like, I think on Tumblr or whatever, there were a few theories going around, and one was that she actually goes to symphonies all the time now.
Yeah,
kind of trying to find the song, or this could be her first time. I think there's another one, or like she finally found it, and then she always goes to all the Vivaldi concerts or something.
That's sweet. I like to think. I mean, I think it's established earlier in the film that she likes to go to mass to listen to the music.
Right.
So she's just a person who seeks out, you know, art, and it's easier to come by now that she's a wealthy woman. But
and she went all the way to the front, like it's like the 18th century equivalent of elbowing your way
pit
to the front row. Yeah. She sits
in
that chair like all the way.
She's
at
moshing.
The end of the balcony.
She's emotionally moshing.
Oh, she is.
Oh my God. You can't spell emotional without mosh. Actually, I think you can.
Okay. Emotional.
Emotional, yeah. My last one is actually related to what you said, Laurel, about that last scene where it goes to black. So I noticed this time, and this is maybe something we've talked about too, but the symbolism of like closure in that whole sequence as Marianne's like preparing to leave, everything is either getting like wrapped up or shut. Right, starting with when they wake up, she like pulls the strings on her dress or corset and like wraps her up in
it. Yeah, welcome back to the patriarchy. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and then
the portrait gets
so she like
hammered into the
The portrait gets the jump scare dude like hammers the painting in, so it's shutting that. The
like
mom wraps Eloise. I know. The mom wraps Eloise in her wedding gown, and then like at the very end, like she shuts the door, and so and it's like there's so much movement there, you know.
Yeah,
so I was like, oh God,
wow. Sure. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot. I guess we're doing an episode.
Yeah, come on,
we probably could actually.
You could.
I still have a bunch more, but
okay, we keep pushing the end of the season. All right,
yeah, what's a season anyway?
What
you know,
is
all
a season?
Time is...
what yeah would love to know what a season is. So, Kelly, Laurel and I follow you on Instagram, and a little earlier this year, we were like, I think she's in Quiberon, and then it turns out you were, and you weren't just like, you know, reposting scenes from the film.
Yeah, but it's nice of you to point out that the cinematography was equal equally good for my iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, at first I was like, why? Why is she just reposting, you know,
yeah, clips from the film. Totally. Yeah.
So, yeah, we would love to hear like a little bit about, you know, what inspired the trip. I mean, I think we know what inspired it, but just anything you'd like to share.
Yeah. So I spent a year living in France and I was trying to, you know, I had a little rail pass and I knew that I would love to go. I mean, Brittany is a very like beautiful region of the country anyway, but I didn't have any friends there. Typically, a lot of my trips would be like to places where I knew other people. But I was like, I'm going to do a little something for Kel. And so I took a little solo trip to, I think the rail route is like Paris to, you know, we'll put it in the episode notes. Don't worry about it. If anyone wants to do this, I'm happy to recreate the steps for you. But Quiberon is this like peninsula off the like western coast of France. And yeah, I spent a couple of days there. It was in May after my teaching year was over and I thought the weather would be nicer than it was. So I say, if you go to visit, I think like July, August is probably peak beautiful, but also probably peak busy and more expensive. And I spent a couple of days in the locations where they shot Portrait are towards the northern end of the peninsula. And actually, maybe I'll just pull up a Google map now for anyone who's curious. I was Googling locations as I was there. Because I was like, oh, this is a beautiful region of the country to see. But also this movie was extremely meaningful to me and I'd love to like see some shooting locations if I could. So I stayed like in the southern part of the island and did like a day trip to the peninsula. And then I did a day trip to a place called Belle Île en Mer, like beautiful island in the sea. And that
literally
was really beautiful
what
and worth
That's
seeing.
Great.
Yeah. There's like a ferry and I think... I'm like, oh yeah, that's ideal, like writer's retreat location. But on the peninsula itself, the like arch where they shoot a bunch of scenes is like a very famous, it's called Arche de Port Blanc Roche Percée. That's the full title. I don't know what, you know, white, blank, whatever. But the whole coastline is very walkable. And from like the southern part of Quiberon to the north part of it, I think I walked it like, I just did a day of walking along the western side of peninsula. And you can do it in like an hour or two.
Wow.
And the whole thing is rocky, coastal, like sort of scrubby plants and flowers and yeah, really beautiful. And then yeah, once you get up there, there's a beach. And I think after a while of walking up this stunning coastline, I was like, I don't know where the fuck this happened. It all sort of starts to look the same. But then I was walking around and I was like, this, okay, so I found the arch and then I was walking around the beach because I was very invested for some reason in finding all the caves. I guess there's only one cave, but I was like, oh, I want to see if I can find all the locations. And ultimately, like the tides coming in and out, it was way too hard to find like where they shot all of the like scenes on the beach or whatever. Yeah. But I do think I found the cave where they had their first kiss. And I did post it on Instagram.
Which we will link to as well.
Yeah, you're going to want to check this Instagram out. I'm posting once every couple of months and it's fire when it happens. Yeah, if you like stories that are only about my podcast and then also, you know, once every 5 months shit posts, you're gonna like that. But yeah, the beach I think where the cave is called Beach of Port Blanc, and yeah, lovely beach. Was too cold to swim and they advise you not to because the water is dangerous or like kind of choppy. Yeah,
it looked really choppy in the movie. I don't know.
Yeah,
but there were surfers though, right, that they had to like digitally
I hadn't heard that. That makes sense. There were people surfing when I was there as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But surfers have wetsuits and stuff, and you know, they don't abide by the laws of, of men,
true.
You know?
True. Did you find the part of the beach when Eloise, like, runs down and, you
and,
know,
like, stares at
like...
the sea?
No. I thought maybe I did, but there were enough outcroppings that looked like Gertrude standing that I was like, I don't know. I'm not confident about that. I'm pretty confident I found the, you know, abortion sprint scene.
Oh, wow.
Nice. Yeah, in the cave where they have their first kiss. And both, even just saying both of those things out loud, I'm like, wow, you are out of your mind.
No.
But yeah.
This is the
a beautiful place. I know, it really is the only place I feel comfortable admitting any of this out loud. I told my partner and she was like, cool. Wow, that sounds like it was really special for you.
When you said that the tides were coming in, I was like, oh my God, Kelly, you're going to like dive to like find these locations. It's like, it's just up to my waist. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that happened, which frequently happens to me, is that I didn't plan my meals well. And you cannot get food at a restaurant in France anytime between like 2 and 6. And so, of course, I'm hitting like low blood sugar as I reach this beach. And the only restaurant there is closed. And I was like, I would have had a whole probably night up there, like a wine bottle and, you know, bread and cheese on the beach type thing if I had planned better. And I didn't. So we'll be back, you know?
So note to anyone listening who plans on
bring a snack.
Visiting.
Yeah,
bring a snack.
I also did. I don't think I ever posted this anywhere, but I also met Celine on the street when I was living in Paris.
And sorry, on the street?
Yeah. I was going to. It really is. I mean, yeah, it's a small city. And I was like going to the Museum of Hunting and Nature with some friends who were in town to visit. And we walked by her on the street. She was outside of a store smoking. And I grabbed my friends so hard, I can't believe they still had arms after. And I was like, that's Celine Sciamma. And my friend Shelley was like, why do you know what she looks like? And I was like, I don't have time for this.
I don't have time to explain this to you.
Yeah, I was like, this is an emergency. You literally need to shut up. So I was like, guys, I think I have to go say, I was like, she's so, like, her work is so important to me. I think I have to go. They were like, yeah, do it. So they kind of like hyped me up. And then I just walked up to her and I think she was waiting for someone she was with to come out of a store. I don't remember what the store was. And I was just like, just wanted to say that I'm a really big fan of your work. I tried to do all of this in French as I did when I met Adele, also in France.
I'm going to die.
It's a small country. And yeah, she was so gracious. She was just like, oh, thank you. That's so nice of you. And then we talked a little bit about what I was there in the country to do and stuff. And obviously did not make any inroads in like, oh, well, I'm actually an actor also. And so if you're looking for someone who really doesn't speak French at all for a future project.
Hit me up.
I was like, you know what? I know that probably she gets stopped by a lot of French people, but maybe not because French people are just cool. And so they don't like ruin someone's day by doing that kind of stuff. But I was like, you know what? I think it's probably... for directors versus actors, it's
for sure,
nice to be
for sure.
Work.
Yeah,
and I always like when people, I mean, you know, on the scale of like a UCB student would come up to me after a show and be like, "What a great show!" Like that never feels bad.
Yeah. I want to find more pictures of like some of the other people that we've talked about who worked on it, like Claire Maton, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it's like
I would recognize Claire Maton if I saw her.
She's pretty distinctive too.
Yeah, she's like, oh my gosh, it's you. Because I bet she doesn't get that at all.
For sure. I don't know though. She's been booking.
That's true.
She's busy. For sure. But I think in general, probably like DPs probably don't get stopped very frequently.
Yeah.
Oh my god, my heart was like racing.
I know. Can you tell us a little bit about the Adele meeting?
Yeah. During the holiday season last year, I had made it a goal to go see Strasbourg, which is like a city on the coast of, or on the coast, on the border with Germany. And it has like the biggest Christmas market in the, one of the biggest Christmas trees in Europe, I think, is its like big claim to fame. But also has like a big, beautiful cathedral and Christmas markets. And it's very beautiful and wintry. So I went there. And as I was there, it was also the weekend that Adele was touring with I say Adele as if we are friends. A weekend where she was there touring with a play called Le Tang, which means the pond, that was written by Giselle Vienne, I think like as an adaptation of a Swiss story. So I went to see that while I was there in Strasbourg. And then as I was leaving the theater, she was outside like smoking with friends. And I was like, well, this one I am going to have to take a picture for because I got to be that girl. But also very lovely. Seemed to have absolutely no ego. Makes sense because she has since quit acting in film because she's like a good person. doesn't want to prop up a toxic industry. But yeah, super like bouncy, lively, cool person, it seemed like.
I'm excited for you to meet Noemi at some point.
I know. I was like, damn, I'm really collecting all. I got COVID and then couldn't go to... But Luana Bajrami, who played Sophie... also directed a movie. They're all It's so beautiful. They're all.
Oh,
in
I
the
thought
world
you were going to say that you also ran into her.
No, but
I. And I was going to just shut my laptop.
I had tickets to a screening where she was just introducing her own like film that she directed last year, The Hill Where the Lionesses Roar, I think. But then I got sick, so I couldn't go.
Oh, man.
But it really would have been 3 out of 4. Yeah. That would have been pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would be able to be normal if I met Noemi now that she's crossed into the American market.
Yeah.
She's crossed over hard. It's no going back.
Yeah.
You see her and you're just like, Tar!
Everyone go see Tar. I feel like we do need to do an episode on it.
You're
at
gonna
some
have
point.
To.
Yeah.
So that's I guess a recap of my year in France and every person I met while I was there.
And thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I didn't see any of the cast of Call My Agent, which is my other passion. But you know, I'll be back.
Aw, that would have been fun.
Yeah. I had one other celebrity sighting. My celebrity sightings were Celine Sciamma, Adele Anel, Elizabeth Berkley from Showgirls. And,
no.
Yeah.
In Paris? What?
Yeah. She was like in my neighborhood on the street. I obviously did not speak to her. I was like, it had been a weird day, but yeah.
Oh, I feel like it would have been very hard for me to recognize her just like in that context. I mean, I don't know what context it would make sense, but.
Well, yeah. I would not have noticed it if I was at lunch with this woman as I was getting ready to leave the city and I was trying to get rid of my bed and I posted it on a website like French Craigslist. I was like, you can have my bed if you want it. You just need to find a way to get it out of the apartment. So this sort of older woman came to my fifth floor walk up, laid in my bed for 5 minutes to decide if it was ergonomic enough, and then was chatting at me just the entire time, just sort of stuff about her life. And I was like, well, yeah, that's so actually, you know what? I'm so sorry. I haven't eaten lunch yet. This is after like an hour. I'm trying to politely escape the situation. And she's like, I haven't either. I'll come with you. So we are sitting at a bistro together having lunch. She gets up to go to the bathroom and she comes back. She's like, there's a woman over there. And again, this is, you know, like, all my translation is like very rough estimate. She was like, there's a woman over there. She's very distinctive looking. I think that I recognize her from TV. I think she's American. You should go look. So I got up and walked around the corner.
Wow.
Lo and behold, Elizabeth Berkley. Yeah.
What?
So funny.
That's incredible. That is so weird.
Yeah. Speaking passable French. So good for her.
Good for her. Yeah. This is now a Elizabeth Berkley podcast. This is great.
Yeah.
She was in that one episode of The L Word, so there's relevance.
There you go. I mean, Showgirls was pretty gay, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my God, yeah. I always forget that Gina Gershon spends the whole movie trying to have sex with Elizabeth Berkley. What a dream. Ugh, what a queen she is. Predatory queen. Yeah, you guys should do an episode on Showgirls.
We should. We've actually talked about that before.
Okay, coming back to Portrait, let's share any wrap-up thoughts we have. You know, we should probably rate this film because we've been doing that throughout this season.
Sure.
I think it's going to be a surprise, probably.
Yeah, it'll be a shock to everyone that I'm rating this five flames. Five fire emojis.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to just go ahead and say that I am also giving this film 5 out of 5. I mean, maybe 10. Can I do like, I'm going to do 6 flames out of 5.
That's really nice.
28 flames.
Yeah, 28 flames. Let's go.
Yeah, a few people wrote in, not in like the comments of the story, but just to say that to rate it like literally 12 flames. So it seems like
great.
It would balance it out.
Yeah, okay.
Cancels out the like ones and twos, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to need an in-house numbers person at some point.
A data person, yeah.
Yeah, just hire an intern.
We have an intern.
We have like 2 interns.
No, we only have 1 intern. Who's our
Right. Taryn is not technically an intern, but
we have a technical intern that doesn't do anything. Uh-huh.
And then a non-intern who actually does help with like transcription and stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
So we rated it 1 billion fires.
There you have it.
And now let's head to the vault.
Let's take a walk down into this dark, cozy.
The wind is howling.
Watch your head.
Well appointed. A little moist, but not too moist. Vault. Mm-hmm. What did you bring with you, Kelly?
I brought with me praying this is not redundant, I brought with me that moment from The L Word where Bette, played by Jennifer Beals, screams, "Tina!" really loud.
Yeah, five people already submitted that, so I hope this is not redundant. Yeah. I thought you were going to say Bette when she like cries at art, but this is even better.
No, it's the Tina scream.
Yeah, I get it.
How are we going to display this? So is there just a button?
I think we could do the hologram next to...
Oh, that's good.
Next to... Yeah. Or like a interactive toy, you know?
Oh, so nice.
Like a robot of Bette, and then when you press her head or something... You know,
she screams
Tina.
Yeah, just a voice filled with pain and rage. Yeah,
this is going to be a popular exhibit in the cave.
Yeah, I think so.
I feel like you're joking, but
no,
people are gonna really like this one. Yeah,
absolutely 100% serious.
They're gonna be pressing that button over and over. It's
Oh, thank you. That's a perfect submission.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Is that our first audio submission?
No.
I feel like it's our first piece of
we
audio.
We haven't submitted any like
songs, no,
bands,
I don't think
or
so.
I didn't put like Joan Armatrading or something. Really?
Well, that would still be a person.
Right.
That's
yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Wow. I was not very specific. I think you're right.
Thanks. Great.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Glad to contribute. Yeah.
Kelly, thank you so much for doing this episode with us. This was such a pleasure. It was super fun. Where can people find you?
Thank you for having me. A pleasure to be here. You can find me on the internet on Twitter and Instagram at username HeyKQ, HeyKQ. Also, if you're Celine Sciamma looking to cast English speakers in films, I'm at HeyKQ.com. You can find my theatrical work there. And if you're listening to this podcast, so you are probably a podcast person, I have a podcast that I host with a friend called Writing Around. It is a recap of a fictional sitcom. So all improvised, and we do a new one every Monday.
That's great. Yeah.
Did our discussion spark any new thoughts or feelings about Portrait of a Lady on Fire? Did the 3% of you watch the film? Mm-hmm. You can post a comment on Instagram at Sapphic Culture Club. You can tweet your opinions at us at Sapphic Podcast. Although, are we all going to stay on Twitter with, you know,
I know. The
whole... I was just debating that, actually.
So maybe not. Maybe not for now. Not that we're on it that much anyway, so not
right.
Not
yeah, keep it
loss.
On Instagram where everything's ethical and above board.
Right.
You can
exactly.
Find us on Mastodon.
Find us on Signal.
You can find us
on
MySpace, LO. Yeah, okay. Or email us at sapphiccultureclub@gmail.com.
And lastly, you can find a link to the episode transcript. Okay, I want to make a note about the episode transcripts because I'm a little bit behind. I'm sorry. But we will get those posted as soon as possible. It's just been kind of a busy month. But you will typically be able to find the episode transcript in the show notes wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Thank you once again, Kelly. It has been such a pleasure and honor to have you on the show. And we will talk to y'all in 2 weeks for our... Season 3 finale! Woo!
Woo!
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.